Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode, on Thursday, June 19th, 2025, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Anti-Trump No Kings rallies draw massive crowds despite Arizona's sweltering summer heat. Arizona House GOP passes budget alone as Democrats boycott vote. AZ Senate introduces bipartisan budget after House goes solo with its, quote, Fantasyland plan. Phoenix Indian Center holds annual rainbow gathering for Two-Spirit LGBTQIA plus community. Bullets strike staffer's car at Daniel Hernandez campaign office. And the Mirror wins three awards for covering Arizona's indigenous communities. And let's get started. Our first story, anti-Trump No Kings rallies draw massive crowds despite Arizona's sweltering summer heat. Thousands rally against deportation policies while president celebrates with military parade in D.C. By Jared McDonald Evoy, Gloria Rebecca Gomez, and Emily Holzhauser, June 14, 2025. Across the Grand Canyon State, tens of thousands of people brave the sweltering summer heat to gather in parks, on street corners, and at the state capitol for a national day of protest aimed at countering President Donald Trump, who was celebrating his birthday with a military parade in Washington, D.C. There were some 40 volunteer-organized No Kings rallies in Arizona on Saturday, including one at the state capitol near downtown Phoenix that was attended by an estimated 5,000 people. That estimate comes from the Arizona Department of Public Safety, which regularly provides crowd estimates for gatherings at the capitol. The event's organizers claimed there were 15,000 in attendance. Nationwide, there were more than 2,000 protests, which were expected to draw millions of attendees. The rallies were organized by a who's who of left-leaning and progressive organizations. While protesters in Los Angeles and other cities have clashed with police and counter-protesters, the events in Arizona remained largely uneventful. The only known altercation at the state capitol involved a man in a pickup truck. Protesters and a man in a pickup truck got into a physical altercation after the man got out of his truck and took a Mexican flag away from a protester, later driving off and throwing water at them. The Arizona Department of Public Safety did not respond to a request for information about the incident. While Trump and the impacts of his administration's policies on immigration were a large focus of the event, multiple speakers talked about the overnight assassination of a top Minnesota Democratic legislator. Minnesota Democratic House Leader Melissa Hortman and her husband were shot by a man impersonating a police officer Saturday morning. Police have identified the suspect as 57-year-old Vance Bolter. Minnesota Democratic Senator John Hoffman and his wife were also shot multiple times in their home but survived. They remain in critical condition. Political violence and political assassinations are real and cannot be tolerated, Phoenix City Councilwoman Anna Hernandez said to the crowd at the Capitol. A moment of silence was held for the lawmakers. But the main focus of the event was largely on Trump and firing up those in attendance to get involved with events like No Kings or with the litany of organizations who had set up booths along the Capitol grounds. Just showing up isn't the action, Kaz Fernandez, co-founder of BlackNet AZ, said. Yelling at the Capitol on a hot Saturday isn't what makes change. Fernandez urged those in attendance to pick an issue and pick an organization, pointing to some of the ones that were in attendance, such as Voter Choice Arizona, which aims to bring ranked choice voting to the state. In between speakers, No Kings organizers brought out local drag queens and kings who gave family-friendly performances. Some had political overtones, such as including quotes from Trump or parts of interviews with anti-LGBTQ lawmakers. June is Pride Month, and many in attendance sported pride flags and signs in support of the LGBTQ community. But if there was a dominant theme to the signs and speeches, it was Trump's mass deportation efforts, which descended on Phoenix this past week. The Phoenix area has been the subject of U.S. Department of Homeland Security raids with high-tech surveillance aircraft providing support to federal agents who have been spotted grabbing people from places such as gas stations, grocery store parking lots, and their homes. Roberto Ravelas, a prominent Latino civil rights leader, spoke to the crowd about the state's past with racism and immigration enforcement. His organization, Somos America, led one of the largest civil rights marches in the state's history and won a lawsuit against then Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio for racial profiling. Ravelas said that people need to keep pointing out that racism is a pretty damn expensive luxury, as the Arpaio-era lawsuits are still costing Maricopa County taxpayers millions of dollars. Others, like former Maricopa County attorney candidate Julie Gnagel, said Arizona is, quote, ground zero for the groups looking to make a profit off the deportation agenda, citing private prison company Geo Group, which has a strong presence in the state and has seen its stock prices skyrocket since the election of Trump. The vast majority of signs carried by protesters focused on immigration issues, and several attendees told the Arizona Mirror that immigration was the key issue that brought them out, some for the first time ever. Mexican flags and flags from other countries targeted for deportation actions, such as El Salvador, were scattered among the crowd. As ralliers marched around the Capitol, a convoy of vehicles began driving around, many waving flags and signs. Many attendees also carried American flags upside down, a signal of distress. As attendees began to make their way out of the Capitol area, a man with a bullhorn advertised for a later event happening Saturday night in Tempe. However, protesters had already been gathering in Tempe for hours at that point for a No Kings rally, where more than 1,000 people gathered in a park and held signs on a freeway overpass. "It's stand up or step up," said 56-year-old Sean Kilburn, a Phoenix resident since 1987. He told the Mirror at the Tempe protest, "It's untenable and intolerable, and I didn't vote for it." Kilburn explained that he served more than 3 years in the Florence State Prison in the 1990s for marijuana possession. With a felony conviction on his record, he cannot vote. "They still don't allow me to vote," Kilburn said, looking out at the traffic and pausing. "Isn't that something? It's okay. Here's my voice." Phoenix resident Cindy Mendoza, 31, came to the Tempe rally with the colors of the Mexican flag painted on her face. She said that her family's legal status in the country is mixed, but her parents are from Mexico. "We're here to speak for those who can't speak," she said. "We love America. We love your people." Mendoza said that the recent immigration raids have created fear in her community. "Some friends in construction, they went to the gas station and they got picked up," Mendoza said. "They were up early heading to work. They stopped by the gas station to get gas and water and they were taken." Organizers on Saturday told attendees that they're planning more events and encouraged those who attended to stay involved. The hands-off and 50501 protests earlier this year drew large crowds as well, but Saturday's No Kings event was larger and included organizers from both events. Near 100-degree temperature doesn't stop Scottsdale residents who look to 2028. In nearby, heavily Republican Scottsdale, an estimated 1,000 people filled the sidewalks at the intersection of Scottsdale and Camelback Roads, waving handmade signs and American flags at people driving by. Chants of "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Donald Trump has got to go," and "This is what democracy looks like," resounded through the crowd. A chorus of honks from the passing cars sounded in response, eliciting cheers. The concerns of attendees span multiple issues, evidenced by posters that, among other things, criticized federal efforts to gut social services like Medicaid, lambasted the recent surge in ICE operations, and underscored the need to protect the U.S. Constitution. But the one through line for all of them was disdain for Trump. Carrie Tannenbaum sported a sticker with Trump's name crossed out on it. Her concern, as a lawyer with more than 40 years of experience, is what she said is a complete and total disregard of law and the Constitution. She was particularly critical of the administration's policies that strip legal protections from hundreds of thousands of immigrants and deport people to a mega prison in El Salvador. "He acts like a king," Tannenbaum said. "He deports innocent people and disregards all of the laws." The Trump administration's aggressive anti-immigrant agenda has sparked protests nationwide, particularly after more than 200 people were detained in Los Angeles, and the White House sent National Guardsmen to quell the public backlash. Susan Coltrera, whose family fled Germany in the 1930s, said she is worried about the similarities that can be drawn between the Nazi regime and the current government's consistent attempts to violate constitutional protections, like due process. "It scares me to death for our future, and the future of our democracy," she said. Coltrera carried with her a sign that read, "Never forget," under the dates for the World War II attack on Pearl Harbor, the September 11th terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center, and the January 6, 2021 attempt by Trump supporters to overthrow the government. Coltrera acknowledged that the third date was controversial because many Republicans, including Trump, have tried to downplay the event as nothing more than a peaceful protest, but she rejected that framing, calling it a clear insurrection. Under the list of dates, Coltrera added a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. that reads, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter." Despite the extreme heat warning and the fact that much of the streets where protesters stood were exposed to the sun, attendees were undeterred. The temperature climbed into the high 90s by late morning, but people remained at the rally for well over 3 hours. Mike Yarnell said his wife questioned his decision to join the crowd before he left, but he said he wasn't discouraged by the possibility of uncomfortable weather. "Imagine if that had stopped President George Washington at Valley Forge," he joked. The 68-year-old said he attended the protest on behalf of his two daughters. He said he was shocked that the political climate has regressed so much that their reproductive rights are more at risk today than they were decades ago. "They had more rights at 15 than they do now in their 20s, he said. "That's frightening." Arizonans enshrined the right to abortion in the state constitution last year, but for millions of women across the country, access to the procedure is curtailed or outright banned. And, Yarnell said, the state-level protections his daughters enjoy can still be undermined if the Trump administration pursues restrictive policies at the federal level. Reproductive rights organizations fear the federal government is aiming to do just that by pushing the Food and Drug Administration to reconsider its safety review of mifepristone, the most widely used abortion pill. If the approval of the pill is rolled back, as anti-abortion groups previously tried to do through the courts, thousands of women seeking accessible and affordable reproductive health care would be left in the lurch. As the protest began to wind down, the discussion turned to electoral contribution as a solution. An organizer urged the crowds to donate to Defend the Taxpayers, a political action committee that is courting moderate Republicans in a bid to unseat U.S. Representative David Schweigert. The Republican represents Congressional District 1, which stretches from central Phoenix to Cave Creek to Fountain Hills, and has long been a target of progressive activists. The district leans Republican, but is highly competitive, with an almost even split between the percentage of voters who cast their ballots for Democratic and Republican candidates. At the same time that Scottsdale residents gathered near the Fashion Square Mall, another protest was taking place in front of Schweigert's office a few miles away. For protesters at the busy intersection, the enthusiasm on display gave them hope that the upcoming midterms will bring change. "People are fed up with what's going on," Contreras said. Mark Pulofsky, who sported a small American flag in his bike helmet, added that Arizona's status as a battleground state could mean the difference, not just for Swigert's seat, but for the federal government as a whole. Control of both the U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate is up for grabs in 2028. "Arizona is a swing state. We have a chance to make a difference," he said. And that concludes our first story, Anti-Trump No Kings rallies draw massive crowds despite Arizona's sweltering summer heat. Next, we have two related stories about the state budget. Our first one, Arizona House GOP passes budget alone as Democrats boycott vote. Next week, Senate Republicans and Governor Katie Hobbs will release the budget they've negotiated. By Caitlin Sievers, June 13, 2025. Republicans in Arizona's House of Representatives passed their package of state budget bills the same way they were created, alone. The majority party, which holds 33 of the chamber's 60 seats, approved each of the 15 pieces of legislation that make up their budget proposal by a vote of 31-0 Friday night, long after all Democratic lawmakers had headed home, after a day of waiting around for Republicans to bring the bills to the floor for debate. Creation of the state's annual budget is usually a collaborative effort among the Republican majorities that control the House and Senate, and Governor Katie Hobbs, a Democrat. But this year, House Republicans created their own state budget plan, divorced from ongoing budget negotiations between Hobbs and Senate Republicans. Legislative Democrats pan House Republicans' budget tactics as a farce, and Hobbs described the plan as dead on arrival because of inadequate funding for K-12 schools, millions in cuts to Medicaid, and a failure to fund her child care affordability initiative. Hobbs and Senate Republicans plan to introduce their own budget Monday, following weeks of negotiations. House GOP leaders had been involved in those negotiations, but walked away several weeks ago. House Appropriations Committee Chairman David Livingston, along with Representative Matt Gress, a former budget director for Republican Governor Doug Ducey, were the chief architects of their chamber's budget proposal. Gress, a Phoenix Republican, responded Friday to criticisms of the way the budgeting process unfolded. "This was a key procedural step that we had to take. It really was," Gress said. "We had to do it in order to get the language that House members wanted to present to the Senate as they take up their legislation next week." Gress said that he'd seen the Senate's plan, and even though he and Livingston didn't work with Senate leaders or Hobbs, he described the two plans as eerily similar. "We all ended up focusing in on the things that matter for the most part," Gress said, admitting that the House's plan was more conservative than the Senate's. The House's $17.3 billion plan includes a 5% pay raise for Department of Public Safety and correctional officers and $94 million to fund infrastructure and road improvements, including I-10 and Highway 347. It also includes a 2.5% tuition reduction, followed by a 3-year freeze for Arizonans who attend the state's public institutions, and it continues to fund the Division of Developmental Disabilities and its Parents as Paid Caregivers program that was at the center of a bitter fight for funding earlier this year. The House budget plan was just introduced publicly in the late afternoon of June 11th, and GOP lawmakers work long hours on Friday to negotiate amendments to get all Republicans on board, since there was no chance of getting any votes from Democrats. one significant amendment to House Bill 2947, approved Friday evening, would give more control to county recorders when it comes to funding and oversight of elections. Some of the changes are clearly aimed at tipping the scale in an ongoing feud between Republican-controlled Maricopa County Board of Supervisors and Maricopa County Recorder Justin Heap. Heap, a former state representative and member of the far-right Arizona Freedom Caucus, has been battling the board over election administration duties, basically since he took office in January. Election duties in Maricopa are split between the board and the recorder. This week, Heap sued the Board of Supervisors, claiming they engaged in an unlawful attempt to seize near control over the administration of elections, VoteBeat reported. Through his lawsuit, Heap seeks to control the information technology staff that manages the Maricopa County voter registration system. In a statement, Supervisor Kate Brophy McGee called the lawsuit absurd, describing it as an example of the recorder's irresponsible and juvenile ready-fire-aim approach to governance. The House Republican budget would distribute $4 million in funds directly to the Maricopa County Recorder's Office instead of the board, and would prohibit the board from having any say in how the funds are spent. It would require the recorder to use some of those funds to hire information technology staff and for the recorder to control all IT equipment used in his duties. Representative Alex Colladan, a Scottsdale Republican and Freedom Caucus member, praised the election oversight measures in the House budget, saying it was important to the caucus that those be included. Colladan, who is an attorney, was sanctioned by the State Bar of Arizona and placed on probation in 2023 for his role in lawsuits challenging the results of the 2020 presidential election, including the infamous Kraken lawsuit that made implausible and evidence-free claims of massive election fraud. While Gress focused on the similarities between the state budget plan and the one in the House, Colladan's outlook was more cynical. This budget process has obviously been very fractious between the House that is pushing for a Republican budget that benefits the Republican majority of the people that Arizona elected, and some of our colleagues in the executive tower and across the courtyard in the Senate that may be having different ideas. But Colladan said he was pleased to see that everyone involved, including Hobbs, were on the same page about putting $1 million toward legal funding for the state's upcoming fight for its share of Colorado River water. Not all Republicans were totally pleased with the outcome, with Representative Justin Olson of Mesa saying he was only on board with the level of spending in the budget because he'd been promised that a separate bill would be introduced next week to cut spending by more than $100 million. Representative Teresa Martinez of Casa Grande said she voted for the budget bill reluctantly, with caution and regret, as she's worried some of the provisions will hurt rural hospitals. But as House Republicans celebrated the passage of their proposal and criticized Democratic lawmakers for their absence from the chamber Friday night, Gress said he was hopeful that the Senate, House, and Hobbs could come to a budget agreement next week. He urged Senate Republicans to work off of the House's proposal next week instead of the one they have negotiated with the governor. I think that ultimately the minds meld across the Capitol to produce almost a virtually identical budget, he said, claiming that 85% of the House's proposal would end up in the final product. That concludes this first budget story. Arizona House GOP passes budget alone as Democrats boycott vote. And now the second story on this same topic. AZ Senate introduces bipartisan budget after House goes solo with its, quote, Fantasyland plan, by Caitlin Sievers, June 16, 2025. The Republicans who lead the Arizona House of Representatives and Senate have a long way to go to come to a consensus on their state budget plans before their deadline in less than 2 weeks. Senate Republicans introduced their budget proposal Monday, which they spent weeks negotiating with Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs. House Republicans left those negotiations several weeks ago to formulate their own plan without input from Hobbs or Senate Republicans. Republican leaders in the Senate described many of the same budget priorities as House Republicans, including public safety, education, transportation, and water. While one of the chief drafters of the House Republicans' plan, Representative Matt Gress, a Republican from Phoenix, described it as eerily similar to the Senate proposal, the two plans diverge on numerous funding priorities, programs, and oversight measures, including funding for Medicaid and K-12 schools. Senate Republicans on Monday took aim at House Republicans for passing their own budget late Friday, which has no chance of getting a signature from the governor. Democrats skipped out on that vote, calling it a sham, since everyone involved knew it had no chance of becoming law. This budget is viable, unlike the Fantasyland budget proposed in the House, Senate President Pro Tem T.J. Shope said in a written statement. Elections have consequences. We are in an era of divided government, and we must proceed as such. Republicans can't get everything they want, and neither can Democrats. We did very well with protecting and funding our Republican priorities. The Senate's proposal includes $17.6 billion in spending, compared to the House's $17.3 billion, with around $260 million more in Medicaid spending in the Senate budget, accounting for most of what that difference is. While the House version would provide around $12 million more than the Senate for critical access hospitals, it also extends a $100 million hospital tax. The Senate plan also provides around $100 million more in total K-12 education funding, even with a modest funding formula increase from the House. The Senate proposal also features around $7 million in adult education funding absent from the House bills. And the House plan includes restrictions and increased oversight measures for the state's Medicaid program and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly called food stamps, which were not in the Senate plan. The House budget does contain some funding missing from the Senate's plan, including some initiatives that Democrats would likely support, like a proposal to beef up oversight of Arizona's school voucher program. The House plan would provide $2 million for 12 new Department of Education staff members to review purchases for the program, which has faced such huge backlogs that now it allows purchases up to $2,000 without prior review. Both proposals include funding for the Riggs Road Overpass Project and improvements to Interstate 10, as well as the dedication of $1 million to fund Arizona's legal fight for its share of the Colorado River water rights. Missing from the Senate plan is the House proposal to defy the will of the voters by barring Arizona's public universities from providing scholarships to students without legal immigration status, even if the money comes from private donors. The Senate Appropriations Committee is set to meet Tuesday morning to discuss the 16 bills that make up its budget proposal and to hear from members of the public and representatives from departments and agencies that rely on state funding about their thoughts on the plan. Senate leaders expect the chamber to vote on its budget package Wednesday and then send it to the House for consideration. During the late evening vote on the House plan last week, Gress asked that the Senate take up the House bill instead of voting on its own proposal. It's unclear how the Senate proposal will be received in the House. Unlike the House budget, the budget we're introducing in the Senate does not extend a $100 million tax, and it does not include unconstitutional policy measures, Senate Appropriations Chairman John Kavanaugh said in a written statement. The governor has been adamant she will veto the House budget. With the possibility of a government shutdown in a matter of days, we must move forward with our conservative spending plan, and we're calling on our colleagues in both chambers to support it. And that concludes this story. AZ Senate introduces bipartisan budget after House goes solo with its Fantasyland plan. You're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. As we begin the second part of our program, Republicans split on Prop 123 school funding extension proposals as deadline approaches. Educators criticize GOP plan excluding paraprofessionals and support staff from pay increases. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, June 18, 2025. A major public school funding plan is set to expire in less than 2 weeks, but Arizona lawmakers have yet to figure out a solution, and public education advocates are unhappy with the current proposal that GOP lawmakers are pushing. At the end of this month, Proposition 123 comes to an end, dramatically shrinking the $300 million in annual revenue shared among the state's K-12 public schools. The easiest way to ensure that funding is preserved is for lawmakers to ask voters to extend it at the next election. But Republicans, who control the legislature and have the final say over what shows up on the ballot, can't agree on how much should be set aside for schools and whether the funding extension should be used to enshrine other conservative priorities in the Arizona Constitution. How it started. Republicans grapple with funding public schools. The money Prop 123 sets aside for public schools every year is sourced from the state's land trust, a portfolio of land given to Arizona by the federal government to benefit public entities, including schools. In 2016, lawmakers sent the proposition to voters to settle a lawsuit launched by multiple school districts accusing the state of failing to abide by a previous voter-approved measure passed in 2000 that directed Arizona to increase public school funding every year to help schools keep pace with inflation. When voters narrowly said yes to Prop 123 in a special election, the rate at which revenue from the state land trust was distributed to schools increased from 2.5% to 6.9%. That rate will revert back to 2.5% at the end of June, costing Arizona public schools more than $200 million. But schools won't feel the strain just yet. The state's general fund will bridge the gap while lawmakers argue over what to send to the ballot. The road to renewing the funding plan has been long and fraught with intra-party conflict and public criticism. Last year, a bid to rewrite Prop 123 to give some Arizona teachers a $4,000 pay raise fell apart, disliked by Republicans, Democrats, and public education advocates alike. Last month, a behind-the-scenes effort to gain Republican support by attaching protections for charter schools, open enrollment, homeschooling, and Arizona's controversial Empowerment Scholarship Account program to a potential extension also evaporated. How it's going? Educators raise concern about restrictions. The latest attempt to ensure public schools can continue to rely on the revenue stream drew a tepid reception during a Tuesday afternoon legislative hearing. With lawmakers looking to wrap up their work in the next few days, a state budget must be passed by June 30th, or Arizona's state government will be forced to shut down with no funding in place for the new fiscal year. Republican leadership in the state House of Representatives rammed through a proposal to extend Prop 123, rife with restrictions and overshadowed by admissions that GOP wish list items may be added later. The 11th hour submission would restore the 6.9% distribution rate, much to the dismay of Democrats, who had backed Governor Katie Hobbs' push last year for an increase to 8.9%, while at the same time restricting reserving the money for only full-time teachers who meet or exceed their yearly performance reviews. Under the previous funding plan, schools were free to spend the money as needed. Educators and supporters of public schools were unimpressed by the plan, criticizing it for leaving out critical school staff members and ignoring the realities of teaching. Marisol Garcia, the president of the Arizona Education Association, the state's largest teachers union, urged lawmakers on the House Appropriations Committee to reconsider limiting pay raises to certified teachers. Support staff, like bus drivers, crossing guards, nurses, and librarians, are becoming increasingly hard to hire, she said, but they're an essential part of students' daily lives. What does an experience look like for our students when they walk onto our campus? Who's the first person they see? Garcia asked. It's usually somebody coordinating recess or somebody crossing the street. The next few people they see is somebody in the cafeteria. What is their experience walking in the hallways? That they are clean and safe, that they have access to a clean and safe bathroom. If they fall and hurt themselves, there's a nurse there. If they're late, they see an attendance clerk. All of these people are not certified teachers, but there's no way Arizona schools work without some of them. Amanda Lugo showed up to the committee hearing with her son Caden, who is disabled, to speak out against the exclusion of paraprofessionals, who often work under full-time teachers and with special needs students. Lugo is currently employed as one, and Caden has thrived at school with their help. The Prop 123 renewal includes special education teachers who work full days or take on a full class load in its definition of people who are eligible for salary increases, but paraprofessionals are not certified, often don't work full days, and they sometimes focus on one student. Lugo denounced the move to leave paraprofessionals out of the pay boost, saying their work ensuring student success shouldn't be ignored. These roles are not optional, she said. The things that I have done for my students and continue to do for my students are not optional. They are essential for the success of our teachers. They are essential for the success of our students in special education environments. Rebecca Beebe, a lobbyist for the Arizona School Administrators Association, pointed out that the proposal threatens to punish new teachers and fails to distinguish between them and their more experienced counterparts. The extension explicitly mandates that pay increases be allocated equally to all eligible teachers and hinges that eligibility on a teacher's performance in their yearly evaluations. Teachers who are rated developing or ineffective, the two lowest of four classifications, would miss out on the pay boost. And Garcia added, because the proposal relies on the outcome of performance evaluations, the wage increase acts more as a potential bonus than an incentive to stay in the profession or sign on to a new teaching contract. That, she said, likely means it won't help mitigate the state's prolonged teacher retention crisis. In September of last year, a month into the academic year, more than 2,000 teacher positions remained vacant or filled by an instructor who didn't meet standard teaching requirements. We view it as a bonus, Garcia said. My concern is that this will not necessarily move the needle as needed than if it went directly to salary. Lawmakers balk at future amendments. While Tuesday's version didn't include any reference to GOP school choice darlings like the previous, stalled iteration did, the proposal sponsor wouldn't rule out adding them in later years. Representative Walter Blackman, a Republican from Snowflake who voted in favor of the renewal, warned that his support could turn into opposition if the plan is amended to deregulate charter or private schools when it goes before the full House. Republicans have long fended off Democratic efforts to tighten oversight of charter schools and the state's private school voucher program. Last month's bid to resolve the Prop 123 issue reportedly sought to enshrine them in the state constitution, effectively preempting future attempts at regulation. Blackman said he is concerned with deregulation that results in special needs students being turned away. He noted that in rural districts like his, there are few options left if schools are allowed to refuse applications. Under current state law, public and charter schools are prohibited from turning away or limiting the number of special needs students they enroll, but school vouchers don't include the same protections. "I want to make it very, very clear," Blackman said, "if there are any deregulations placed as amendments on anything to do with not holding charter schools, private schools to the same standards as our public schools, I will be a no on this bill." In his concluding remarks, Representative David Livingston, a Republican from Peoria, said that there is still time to make changes to the referral and that he would support a move to deregulate charter schools or protect school vouchers. He added that more legislation is needed to encourage private schools and charter schools to set up in rural districts, and he said he would be willing to address the issue in the proposal. "Parents matter. Parents' choice. Parents' options matter," he said. "If they want to choose K through 12, if they want to go to a charter, if they want to homeschool, if they want ESAs, more for all of those." For Representative Justin Olson, a Republican from Mesa, the problem with the referral that might cause him to flip his vote later is its distribution rate. The 6.9% rate, he said, might prove to be unsustainable in the future. A similar concern was raised last year by Arizona Treasurer Kimberly Yee, who oversees the state land trust. Yee advocated for a 4% to 5% distribution rate, but that idea was panned by both lawmakers and Hobbs, who pointed to the trust's continued growth as proof that it could reliably sustain at least a 6.9% rate. When Prop 123 was sent to voters in 2016, the trust was projected to increase to $6.2 billion over the next decade. As of last month, that expectation was outstripped, with a value at $8.68 billion. Nevertheless, the referral allows the legislature to reduce the distribution rate if necessary, with a 3/4 supermajority vote from each chamber. The prospect of Republican holdouts may doom the referral's future. While Republicans hold majorities in the State House and Senate, the party can't count on a buffer from across the aisle. Democrats appear unanimously opposed to the proposal. Ultimately, the proposed extension of Prop 123 was passed out of committee along party lines, with only Republicans in support. One Republican, Representative Matt Gress, was absent. The Phoenix Republican has been at the forefront of the effort to renew Prop 123 for the past 2 years and was part of last month's attempt to enshrine school choice initiatives in the state constitution as a way to garner GOP support. The proposal Gress drafted this year was set to be considered by the full state House of Representatives just hours before the new version was approved by the Appropriations Committee. But that plan was scrapped without explanation. It's unclear whether the latest iteration will supplant it or if the two will be weighed separately. And that concludes this story. Republicans split on Prop 123 school funding extension proposals as deadline approaches. Our next story, evidence-free Medicaid fraud claims come to Arizona as GOP pushes health care cuts. Janae Shamp and a pro-Trump group claim 20,000 millionaires are on AHCCCS, but provide no proof, by Jared McDonald Evoy, June 17, 2025. A Republican state senator and a pro-Trump group on Tuesday accused Arizona's Democratic governor of providing over a massive health care fraud scheme. But Senator Janae Shamp and the MAGA group she claimed made the discovery produced no evidence. And more than 7 hours after making the claims at a press conference, the Patients First Coalition has yet to produce a report that Shamp promised would contain that proof. In essence, Shamp and the Patients First Coalition, which was created to boost Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s nomination to lead the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, are accusing the Arizona Health Care Cost Containment System of failing to screen applicants for income and asset eligibility. The result, they allege, is that Arizona is letting some 20,000 millionaires onto Medicaid and turning a blind eye to $6 billion in fraud. AHCCCS received approximately $17 billion in federal dollars and $2.5 billion in state general funds in the 2024 fiscal year. Christian Slater, a spokesman for Governor Katie Hobbs, slammed SHAMP and the Radical Patients First Coalition for spewing lies to justify the Republican push to slash Medicaid funding and take health care away from millions of people in Arizona and across the country. Right now, her Republican colleagues are pushing legislation that will slash Medicaid spending in Arizona by more than $300 million in state and federal funds, while putting up to an additional $7.5 billion at risk, Slater said in an emailed statement. This reckless legislation would jeopardize life-saving health care coverage for 500,000 Arizonans while denying an additional 100,000 or more from coverage. These heartless cuts would result in rural hospitals shutting down, countless jobs lost, and people dying for lack of health care. Governor Hobbs agrees with Governor Brewer when she said, "You can't kill people to balance your budget." Exactly how SHAMP, a Republican from Surprise, and the group reached that conclusion is anyone's guess. It's also unclear if they accessed the names of the AHCCCS enrollees, which is private information under both state and federal law, including the Social Security Act and Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, H-I-P-A-A. SHAMP told reporters that she acquired the information about AHCCCS recipients from, quote, vendors, and that she was legally allowed to obtain it because of her authority providing oversight as a state lawmaker, but she did not provide details. Tuesday evening, a spokeswoman for the Senate provided two letters that SHAMP received from the data analytics firm LexisNexis, which contracts with the state of Arizona to verify some applicants for Medicaid health care, containing answers to questions that the Senate Majority Leader posed about their work. But those letters don't contain any information that backs up the claims she or Patients First Coalition made. The fraud claims made in Arizona mirror allegations the group made earlier this month in Ohio. A request for comment from the Ohio Department of Medicaid went unreturned. The Patients First Coalition promised to release its report shortly after the morning press briefing, but as of Tuesday evening, the report has not been made available to the Arizona Mirror. The Patient First Coalition was created by an Ohio GOP strategist named Shannon Burns, and its initial purpose was to act as a, quote, war room for RFK Jr. during his confirmation process. It launched with six figures in initial funding right before RFK Jr. was set to go before the U.S. Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Since RFK Jr.'s confirmation, the group has pivoted and begun to focus on state-level issues as part of the MAHA, or Make America Healthy Again, agenda. Nothing on the organization's website points to Burns, health lobbyist Jim Frogue, or healthcare consultant Jeff Cantor, who Politico reported are behind the organization. The organization's website mostly features stock images and calls to action, but says nothing about who runs it or funds it. Burns is a fervent Trump supporter who made headlines in 2019 for owing the IRS hundreds of thousands of dollars while working for the Trump White House. An email seeking a copy of the group's report sent to Matt McAwiak, a longtime Texas GOP political consultant and chair of the Travis County Republican Party, who is listed as the press contact for the organization, did not elicit a response. McAwiak was also involved in an election lawsuit that demanded the court order election officials to replace every Democrat poll worker with ones from a GOP-approved list. During Tuesday's press conference, SHAMP said that this was not a Democrat or Republican issue, but did not disclose the deep MAGA ties of the organization which had been aiding her. Burns' organization also appeared to be involved in the anti-vaccine space, including promising an upcoming conference that includes a list of speakers with ties to the COVID-19 and election misinformation world. Among those speakers are Crom Carmichael, who called the events of January 6, 2021, a, quote, convention riot. Individuals who believe 5G and chemtrail conspiracy theories, a doctor who allegedly gave out mask waivers for good Google reviews, and a doctor who has issued non-peer-reviewed misleading reports. Shamp herself is no stranger to vaccine misinformation. She held multiple Senate hearings where misinformation about COVID-19 and vaccines was spread. The Arizona chapter of RFK Jr.'s Children's Health Defense sponsored the event. Shamp sent a letter to Hobbs requesting a full audit of Medicaid eligibility, not just for one category of recipients, but across the board. AHCCCS has not been without its issues. The state has been grappling with recovering $2.5 billion that was lost in a scheme that targeted Native Americans, as AHCCCS allowed approximately 13,000 unlicensed providers of sober living homes into its system for a four-year period. That concludes this story. Evidence-free Medicaid fraud claims come to Arizona as GOP pushes health care cuts. And we want to acknowledge that the Arizona Mirror wins three awards for covering Arizona's indigenous communities by Jim Small, June 13, 2025. Shondine Silversmith and the Arizona Mirror took home three awards in the Indigenous Journalists Association's annual journalism contest. Silversmith, who began working for the Mirror covering Arizona's indigenous communities in 2021, was honored on June 12th for her work covering the continuing fallout from the state's sober living home fraud crisis, the challenges that Indigenous voters face when heading to the polls, and the role that tribal culture plays for 2S LGBTQ plus people. She was awarded first place for best editorial in the IJA contest professional category for her reporting on the election day challenges that Navajo voters had to overcome in order to cast their ballots in 2024. Through the course of her reporting on the day's activities, Silversmith spent nearly 10 hours in her car and logged more than 250 miles as she visited just 10 polling locations. On average, the polling stations within the Navajo Nation are about 20 to 30 miles apart, depending on the part of reservation you live in. But there are places where people may have to drive up to an hour one way just to vote, she wrote. Silversmith also earned a second place for Best Long-Form Magazine Story for her continued coverage of the challenges Native people and communities are facing because of the massive Medicaid fraud that victimized tribal members and that state leaders turned a blind eye to for years. For the story, she followed volunteers who scoured the streets of Phoenix to find people who had been displaced after the sober living homes they were living in were abruptly shut down when officials cracked down on the Medicaid fraud. "We're going through genocide," one of the activists told her about how bad the crisis had gotten. And she was honored with another second place award for Best Two-Spirit Coverage, an indigenous term that broadly encompasses LGBTQ plus people, for her reporting on pride celebrations in tribal communities across Arizona, from the large Navajo Nation to the tiny Hualapai tribe. "It's really good to be able to see our own people coming together, not only to celebrate pride, but to celebrate their own people that live and work in their community," one Tahana Odom celebrant told her. The Indigenous Journalists Association, which was formed in 1983 and originally known as the Native American Press Association, serves and empowers Native journalists through programs and actions designed to enrich journalism and promote Native cultures. Its annual journalism contest recognizes excellence in coverage of Indigenous communities and issues that directly affect Native peoples. And that concludes this story. Mirror wins 3 awards for covering Arizona's indigenous communities. And we congratulate the Arizona Mirror and Shaundine Silversmith. And we hope we have time in our next program to read her story that won this award. Phoenix Indian Center holds annual rainbow gathering for Two-Spirit LGBTQIA+ community. And it looks like with that, it is all the time we're going to have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. With all the budget stories, we ran out of time to cover some of those stories that we promised, but we'll go back to them in a future episode, I'm sure. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Remember, if you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on demand podcasts. And you can also take Sun Sounds with you, getting our stream and on-demand podcasts on our Sun Sounds of Arizona app for both Apple and Android phones. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. And don't forget to spread the word to your friends and neighbors that anyone who is unable to read print for any reason can find lots of great programming on Sun Sounds 24/7. Have them check us out at sunsounds.org. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to seeing you again next week. Bye-bye.